Welcome back, everybody, to the Deep Dive. We're diving into a case today, a Supreme Court case from 1971, Younger v. Harris. It's a big one, still gets talked about today. We're going to see how free speech bumps up against state power and how the Supreme Court kind of told federal judges to, like, stay out of state criminal cases.
Younger, it's a fascinating case, really gets to the core of how our government works. Federalism, you know, that balance of power between the feds and the states. In this case, it's not just some old theory in a law textbook. It's had huge impacts on legal strategy, especially when you get into those really hot button issues that end up in state courts.
Okay, so to get into Younger, we got to like set the scene. It's California in the 1960s, lots of social movements, protests, all that. And California at the time had this law on the books called the Criminal Syndicalism Act. It was meant to, well, basically curb anything they thought was a quote-unquote radical activity. Which brings us to our main character in this story, John Harris Jr., who was part of the Progressive Labor Party.
And that law, it wasn't exactly brand new. I mean, it was actually passed way back in 1919. The goal then was to suppress groups that were advocating violence or sabotage. But fast forward to the 60s, right? The law was being used in a totally different context. This time, it was more about targeting activists and people who were challenging the status quo, like Harris.
So what exactly got Harris in trouble? Well, it all started with, believe it or not, a leaflet. A black man, Leonard Detweiler, was killed by a police officer. And Harris, he responded by, you know, handing out leaflets, protesting the killing, and criticizing the police. Sounds like pretty straightforward First Amendment stuff, right? Expressing his views, speaking out against injustice.
You'd think so. But the state of California, well, they saw it differently. They argued Harris was, how did they put it, advocating unlawful acts of force or violence to bring about political change. Essentially saying, like, his leaflets were some kind of call to arms, and that's where that Criminal Syndicalism Act they dug up comes back in.
So they arrest Harris. And, of course, he's going to fight back. So he challenges this whole law, saying it's so vague, it could, like, shut down free speech, create a chilling effect, you know, where people are afraid to speak up, even if what they're saying is totally legal, because they don't want to get caught in that legal web. And get this, a federal district court actually agreed with him.
Yeah, the district court stepped right in and said, whoa, hold up. They blocked the prosecution, ruled the Criminal Syndicalism Act unconstitutional. Big win for Harris, right? Win for free speech, you'd think so. But the Supreme Court, well, they had a different ending in mind, and this is where things get really interesting. You've got this lower court sticking up for free speech, and then you've got the Supreme Court about to weigh in, and maybe with a very different perspective. The Supreme Court, they ended up reversing that lower court ruling in a 6-3 decision, said the prosecution it could go forward.
6-3, huh? That's pretty decisive. Sounds like the Supreme Court had something to say. So what was your reasoning? Why overturn what seemed like a win for free speech?
Well, here's where this idea of comedy comes in. It's a big one. Basically, comedy, it's kind of like, you know, this understanding between the federal government and the states. They agree to respect each other's turf. It's almost like, I don't know, think about having roommates. You don't just barge into their room and start rearranging all their stuff, do you? Gotta respect their space.
Okay, yeah, I get the roommate analogy. But how does that play into Younger v. Harris? You saying the federal court was kind of stepping on the state's toes? By getting involved in a state prosecution?
Exactly. The Supreme Court was saying, look, federal courts, you got to back off. Let the states do their thing. That majority opinion, by the way, was written by Justice Black. He really drove home this idea that federal courts, they shouldn't be meddling in state criminal cases unless it's, like, absolutely necessary. And this whole idea, it became known as Younger abstention.
Younger abstention. Got it. So basically, hands off state prosecutions, right? Sounds simple enough, but something tells me it's probably not that simple. I mean, are there ever times when a federal court can step in?
You're right. There are some exceptions. The court, they laid out a few specific situations. Like, for example, if it's clear the state is prosecuting someone just to harass them, you know, to shut them up, bad faith kind of thing, then maybe a federal court could step in. Or, and this one's really tough to prove, if the state law itself is so blatantly unconstitutional, like no way to interpret it in a way that's legal, then maybe a federal court could get involved.
There's a few loopholes, but generally it's hands off. Okay, but what about those other plaintiffs we talked about, the ones who joined Harris's lawsuit? They weren't actually facing prosecution themselves, but they said the law, it had this chilling effect on their free speech. Did their claims go anywhere?
Good point. Well, the Supreme Court, they basically said, hold on, not so fast. They ruled those other plaintiffs, they didn't have standing to sue because they weren't personally facing, you know, actual legal consequences. Think of it this way. You can't just sue because a law makes you nervous. You got to actually be harmed by it to have your day in court.
So even if a law seems like, I don't know, scary, like it could stop people from speaking freely, there's nothing you can do unless the state actually tries to use it against you. Seems a little rough, doesn't it? I mean, what if people are so intimidated by the law they just censor themselves?
Yeah, I see what you mean. The court, they argued there are other ways to address that kind of worry, like people could push for the law to be changed, you know, through political action, or they could just wait and see if they get prosecuted and then challenge the law.
Okay, so we got comedy, younger abstention, and a reminder about how important standing is. But this is the Supreme Court we're talking about, so I gotta imagine there was some pushback, right? Somebody disagreed with this whole hands-off approach.
Oh, absolutely. Justice Douglas, big champion of free speech, he wrote this impassioned dissent, argued that the majority opinion was basically giving states the green light to silence dissenting voices. He saw it as a huge danger to First Amendment rights. Felt like the court wasn't doing its job protecting those rights.
So just Justice Douglas, huh? Nobody else saw it his way?
Not entirely. Two other justices, they agreed with the outcome in the end, but they did voice some concerns about how younger might be applied, you know, too broadly in future cases. They worried it could let states pass laws that are maybe possibly unconstitutional and then use younger to shield them from review by federal courts.
Interesting. So even among those who agreed with the decision, there were some, you know, nuances, worries about how far this younger principle could go. Not as clear-cut as it might seem, even with that 6-3 vote. It really gets to the heart of that whole push and pull between states and the federal government in our system and how we try to protect individual rights and all of that. So, okay, we've got this big case, right? Younger v. Harris, drawing some pretty clear lines about when federal courts can get involved in state prosecutions. But does Younger just kind of, I don't know, fade away into history? Or has it, like, stuck around, shaped how we think about free speech and federalism today?
Oh, it's definitely still around. Younger v. Harris, it pops up all the time. And it's had a huge impact on legal battles, everything from abortion to voting rights. Think about it, right? So many of those really controversial issues we're dealing with right now, they end up playing out in state courts. And Younger, it basically sets the ground rules for when those federal courts can step in.
Can you, like, give us some examples of how Younger is still relevant now? I mean, this case is over 50 years old.
Sure. Think about all those state laws popping up, restricting abortion access. A lot of those are being challenged in federal court. But Younger, it keeps coming up, making it harder for federal judges to, you know, block those laws from taking effect. The argument is you got to exhaust all your options in state court first, even if the law seems like on its face totally unconstitutional.
So it sounds like Younger could almost, I don't know, be used to protect some of these state laws, even ones that maybe shouldn't be on the books, by slowing down or even stopping those federal court challenges.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. But we got to remember the thinking behind Younger, right? It's about respecting states and letting them, you know, run their own show, trusting their courts can handle these constitutional questions. But yeah, the downside is sometimes it can feel like justice delayed is justice denied, especially when we're talking about stuff that really impacts people's lives.
Yeah, definitely a tough issue. No easy answer. So what does all this mean for us regular folks? Just trying to understand how all this works. What's the, like, big takeaway from our deep dive into Younger v. Harris?
The big thing, I think, is that Younger v. Harris, it wasn't just about one guy and some leaflets. This case, it was about drawing a line, state power versus federal power. And that debate, it's still going strong. The case shows how important it is to, you know, really get how our system works, the different branches of government, how they interact, especially when we're talking about basic rights.
It also shows how something from, what, 50 years ago can still have an impact today. Started as a case about a California law from, what was it, 1919, and some protests in the 60s. And now, here we are still talking about it, shaping how we approach some of the biggest legal fights going on right now.
Exactly. That's why cases like Younger are so important to understand. It's not about, you know, just memorizing legal stuff. It's about getting those core ideas and how they shape, well, everything, the legal landscape, the political landscape. And sometimes it's about asking those tough questions, like, does Younger get it right? Is it really protecting federalism? Or is it just a, you know, a way for states to do things they shouldn't?
Whoa, big questions. I think those are questions legal scholars, policymakers are all still wrestling with today. And for everyone listening out there, it's definitely something to think about as you, you know, continue to explore this whole world of law, how it affects us all. Younger v. Harris, it's definitely a case that keeps on giving.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. And if we learn anything from Younger, it's that this back and forth between the states and the feds, it's not going away. It's built into our system, and it's going to keep on shaping how we deal with some of the biggest challenges we face as a country.